So history is being made in the nation of Bangladesh this week, a tragedy that may have as much impact on the working conditions for garment workers in that country as the horrible Triangle Shirtwaist Company fire of 1911 had in the New York City garment industry. Nearly 400 people died in a collapsed building last week where garment workers for Western apparel retailers worked. It's the deadliest tragedy to ever occur in the garment industry. In response, representatives from major retailers convened in Frankfurt, Germany to discuss what can be done to improve factory safety in one of the biggest exporting markets in the world, but it's not clear that any progress was made. Novelist M.T. Anderson recently wrote about the industry in an op-ed piece for our partner, The New York Times. He's the author of award-winning novels, including Feed, The Pox Party, and other novels. M.T. Anderson, welcome.
Hi there.
There's a historic current here, a historic narrative that you see in Bangladesh that really mirrors what's going on in the garment industry for a century now. Can you describe?
Yeah, and I'd actually say for longer than that. I would say actually for two centuries, really since industrialization first hit the shores of the U.S. And what I think is we see again and again, you know, as I sit here in leafy New England, surrounded by those old beautiful mill buildings that were built in many cases back in the 1820s, 1830s, you have the same sort of cycle where initially you get a rural population who is convinced to work in factories, very exciting for them, chance they believe to make a new life, and gradually over the course of 10, 15 years, conditions start to get worse. There's a huge squeeze on them. That leads to a kind of a rise in activism, at which point often you see in this cycle that has gone on again and again throughout our history, then you tend to see a moment of violence, typically, moments of riots, that kind of thing. And then eventually a kind of a equilibrium that is often caused by, say, a company moving their operation elsewhere or hiring a different ethnic set of people to kind of flood the mill and flush out those who are demanding too much.
Or if you look at the Foxconn situation in China, you get a coalition of suppliers and parent company, although Apple isn't a parent company of Foxconn, to come in and really make working conditions appropriate to the production that everyone wants to achieve.
And that, right, and that's the best possible scenario, obviously.
And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in Bangladesh, but would you say that the workers in that factory who didn't really understand the conditions they were working under are not unlike the young women who worked in the Triangle Shirtwaist building in New York who came as single women to try to find a better life for themselves and were willing to do anything and really look the other way, even at their peril?
Well, I mean, I think that workers do understand what's going on in their work situations. I think that they do overwhelmingly, and they are in many cases in various locations around the world, agitating, in fact, for a lot of the things that we here in this country take for granted. A lot of the things about paid overtime that is not forced overtime, minimum wage that is in line with the expenses that you have to have as a person. You know, I mean, for example, in Bangladesh, the minimum wage is actually, over the last 14 years, there's been a continual situation where it tends to be pretty far below a living wage. It tends to be sort of suppressed by the government lagging behind inflation, for example.
And in Bangladesh, the growth has been extraordinary. There were tens of thousands of garment workers a decade ago. There are perhaps 4 million today, and the right. Exports are upwards of $20 billion last year.
Right.
So with that kind of growth, would you see unionization, would you see the power of these workers as having a political impact in Bangladesh in the same way that garment workers really led the way in unionized issues in the United States and other places around the world?
Absolutely. And I think that's wonderful. It's how it should be. I mean, unions in those early stages really do have a very real function. When you don't have adequate regulation about even straightforward things like will the building stand up, or where those regulations are so regularly flouted and where it's taken for granted that they're going to be flouted.
You know, we're talking sort of enthusiastically about this, but of course, you know, 400 people dead. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible tragedy. It seems senseless for this kind of a sacrifice to produce progress that ought to have been obvious from the beginning.
Well, and it was. I mean, I think that that's the thing. It is obvious to the workers who are in this situation. They see all of this around them. And it's more that I feel like the rest of us who are actually partaking in the system, those of us who are buying these clothes, those of us who in particular are demanding to have, you know, a pair of jeans for $15 rather than $16 or $17, you know, we in a sense are part of the system, and it's us who unfortunately have to kind of wake up to it before anything can change. The workers are already very well apprised of their situations.
Given the fact that this exploitation goes on and is persistent, nevertheless, there is a sense that this activism comes in a sense from the product that's made, the fact that it actually touches people, the fact that the argument that you would not want to be wearing something that someone died to produce can be persuasive, right, even in the industrialized world.
Absolutely. Well, so there was a case back in, I think it was 2007, where it turned out that Gap Kids garments, and I will hastily add, I'm sure the Gap had no idea that this was actually happening, but were being made by literal child slave labor in New Delhi. So that literally kids who their parents had decided to sell them to the factory who were making these garments. The kids were being hidden under the floors or in sacks when the routine inspections happened. And so you have, on the one hand, the kids making the garment and the kids wearing the garment at the end. Children of the same age, children of 10 years old, 11 years old, that kind of thing. I think it's very striking. Would you want this to be your child? Are you okay with it happening to someone else's child? And that's obviously a very extreme case, but I think it's also a good one to focus on as an example.
Finally, before we go, when you went to your closet after this tragedy in Bangladesh, did you look for Bangladesh, made in Bangladesh labels before you wrote your op-ed piece for the Times?
Well, you don't have to. They're on everything. I mean, we don't realize how intimately this is connected with our lives. And that's the important thing, I think, that this terrible thing is actually going to open our eyes to.
M.T. Anderson is the author of award-winning novels, including Feed, The Pox Party, and other novels. His op-ed for The New York Times is on how the garment industry in Bangladesh and the tragedy that took place last week in the Rana Plaza affects all of us. M.T. Anderson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.